She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Hello and welcome to The Persistence. This is She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast. My name is Beatrice and I'm here with
Elizabeth.
And today we are going to talk about the child free movement.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about it as a movement because it's not like an official movement.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the child free movement.
But yes. But yes, it's kind of a movement.
I mean, I would say the last thing we want to do is play some like bullshit game where we say that women who have children are sheep playing into the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. There are women who choose to have kids. There are women who choose not to have children. And neither decision makes you a better woman or less of a woman or...
Oh, better feminist.
Or a better feminist or a worse feminist or whatever. The problem with so many articles and so much of the rhetoric surrounding this issue is that it really often takes one side or the other without considering really a measured, logical choice that women on both sides have taken.
Yeah.
And it's a super complicated issue. So we're not going to be able to come to some resolution on it today, but hopefully.
As usual, we're not coming up with any solutions or resolutions for anything.
We're just kind of bitching about stuff.
We're just bitching about shit and telling you all the things that are fucked up about this world. So that you're sad enough to eat all the chocolate.
Exactly.
So we just want to give you a reason to eat chocolate.
Yeah.
That's what we do. That's what we're here for.
Hopefully we can address some of the issues related to those who choose to remain child-free. And we're not going to call it childless. We call it child-free. That's the way that the movement or the people who identify with this movement refer to themselves. And because we're all about like self-identification, that's how we will refer to it. So because we're all about like self-identification, I am child-free. Beatrice, are you child-free?
I am so child-free. I'm the freest of any child anyone could ever be.
Is this a decision that you're making for your entire life? Like you don't want to have kids, period? Or is this something that you just think is a temporary thing and you're going to eventually decide to have children?
To be honest, I don't think it ever really was a decision I made. It just for me, like already when I was 12 years old, the idea of having a child was just never a part of what I wanted in life. You know, it's just not even an idea that I have, that I could have a child. To me, it seems absurd to me to have a child. I don't want a child. I never wanted a child. So I don't know if it really was like a conscious decision, but it was always clear to me that I don't want to have children.
Yeah. I mean, I think I probably as a kid was open to the idea of having kids. I babysat like you do in America when you're a preteen and you need $2 an hour in money, which I think it's crazy that people entrust their children to like 12 to 15 year olds and pay them. Well, at the time it was like $2 an hour. Now it's much more expensive than that. But
well, let alone trust, no matter who it is, trust someone with that your child that you only pay $2 an hour.
Oh, agreed.
I mean,
agreed.
Well,
I mean, hello. Pink collar jobs, poor labor practices,
Let's not get into it.
So I took care of kids when I was a teenager, mm-hmm. but I never really related to small children. I think they're weird. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. So when I got married, my husband and I really talked about it, and neither of us really wanted kids, so we just chose not to. And then I got like a ton of grief from my mother, like, when are you going to have kids? And my mother's friends saying, when are you going to have kids? And I just said, it's not going to happen. Like, stop asking me, because we don't want kids. So this is an issue that is really personal.
Yeah, to me too. I mean, I think my parents always knew that I don't want to have kids because I always told them already when I was a kid myself. And I feel very similarly about it as you do, that I don't have any maternal feelings towards small children. I don't get it. I used to work as a teacher for some time and I taught sometimes children, sometimes teenagers. And I could relate to the teenagers, so I enjoyed teaching them. But with the children, they didn't like me a lot because they of course, they notice that it's not like my favorite thing to do is teaching them is not my favorite thing to do. So I don't know. It's just not a good fit.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have very maternal instincts toward cats and dogs. Not so much human children.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. So there was a 2013 Time magazine article that came out about the child-free life. And in fact, they featured a piece on the front page of the magazine with a young-looking kind of millennial couple who looked carefree and childless, basically the image of perfection. They're like laying there. I think it looks like they're laying on a beach, relaxing. And this article led to a ton of blog posts, articles, and think pieces all over the internet claiming that they knew what was best for women. Christian women said that women who didn't want kids were selfish. Child-free women. Yeah, of course, right? Child-free women said that people with kids were selfish. The whole thing devolved into this like disaster.
Mm-hmm.
The most measured piece about it from that kind of time period was by Eve Vauter, V-A-W-T-E-R, on Mommy-ish, who, while wishing that smart people would have kids so that her kids would have someone to discuss books with, which... You know, we all want smart kids.
Makes sense.
Smart people, smart children in the world that grow up to be intelligent adults who, yeah. Anyway, she stated the following, quote, "No one should ever feel bad or less than for not having kids. It's no one else's business. I love being a parent, but I totally respect women and men who decide not to be." Which is a refreshing view to hear. And if only we had more voices like this in the debate, perhaps we would be have more civil discourse around this issue.
Apparently, it's impossible to so many people to just let other people do whatever the fuck they want as long as it does not affect themselves.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to having children or not having children. It seems to be something that everybody seems to have an opinion on what everybody else does.
Absolutely. And what I thought was so interesting about this Time magazine article is that there was very little mention of the fact that it has been a movement, or at least women have been choosing not to have children for some time. So there was a throwaway sentence about how the, quote, biological imperative to have children was called into question by women starting in the 70s. Hello, second wave feminism. They give one example of a woman currently in her 50s who chose not to have kids. But these are really the exceptions in the article that Time uses to prove that millennials are ruining the future.
As they do.
Well, yeah, right? I mean,
they're also eating too many avocados. That's also a problem.
Every article these days is talking about how millennials are like, they're ruining everything. They're disrupting everything.
They're just the worst people.
But it's not new. Nothing they're doing is new.
No.
Anyway, the problem with this is that...
I don't actually think that millennials are the worst people. I'm being sarcastic.
No. I don't either. I'm not a millennial, but I don't think that they're the worst. But what I will say...
Just the second worst.
Well, you know, behind baby
boomers. After the baby boomers.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
But the fact is, this isn't an invention of millennials who are fighting against their like boomer and early Gen X parents. The choice not to have kids is actually a really important part of the women's rights movement. And if you want to go back and listen to our episode about that, you can hear all about how choice and determination of your own body are really important parts of the women's rights movement.
Yes.
But there was more recently an article, a really good article from May 2017 in The Atlantic by Olga Kazan entitled "How People Decide Whether to Have Children." And in it, she goes through some really recent statistics and studies about decisions surrounding the issue, as well as her own personal story of ambivalence related to having a child. This is something that, you know, what I think is so fascinating is we have had women who have chosen not to have children forever.
Yes.
We used to call them spinsters. They became nuns. There are any number of, you know, oftentimes school teachers, female school teachers, weren't allowed to have families, weren't allowed to have children. They were school teachers for so long that they got into the point of their lives where their fertility decreased, and then they weren't able to have children, and they didn't have families. So this is not a new thing.
No, not at all. And there's also a problem that I have with this idea that it's a movement that started in the 1970s, because there have been women without children and women that chose not to have children since forever. I mean, it's easier nowadays to not have children with the means of contraceptions that we have at our disposal. But women who don't want to have children and didn't have children have been around since forever.
Oh, that's absolutely true. It may be that in the 70s, and we'll talk about this a little later, but in the 70s, we had more options. There were more people talking about this. Choosing not to have children and choosing to have a career certainly became possible.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's not something that's new. It's just that, you know, maybe we have more people who are interested in it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easier. It's easier to not have children than it was.
Oh my God.
Because we have the pill and we have condoms and we have all the things.
Well, it's easier, but it's harder in some respects because you feel like you have to justify your decision.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, all the time, no matter what you do.
It can't just be, I don't want to have children. It has to be, I hate children, so therefore I don't want to have children. Or, no. I want to have a career, so I don't want to have children. And, you know, the two are not mutually exclusive, but...
Yeah, it's still something that's considered weird. And I think one of the reasons why that is, because it's completely fine for a man to say, I don't want children.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's also acceptable for a man, if he has children, to not care as much for the child as the woman has to.
Well, of course. Although they have done some studies that have shown that men's as men have children, their testosterone decreases and they become more nurturing.
Yeah. I didn't hear
which that. I think is
yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. They've done some biological studies that show that men's testosterone decreases when they're like around children, particularly their own children, and that leads to them being more nurturing parents. Not all of them, obviously. This is not a universal.
No, but I'm talking about like societal expectations and like the social roles that we're all kind of socialized into. And there's a clear, I think, connection between femininity as a construct and motherhood.
Yes, definitely.
So that motherhood is kind of perceived as the highest form of femininity or the most fulfilled form of femininity.
Yeah.
And in my research, actually, one of the first pages I came across is a page called, and it's apparently a very Christian page. It's called aboverubies.org. I don't know if you've ever came across it.
I don't go to websites like that. Mm-hmm, not that I don't look at Christian stuff, but I don't go to websites that explicitly talk about like pregnancy and motherhood, except to research.
Well, I just typed in femininity, motherhood into Google, and I didn't know what that website was. And so I just clicked on it. And then what I read was this, and I'm going to read it to you so you don't have to click on it yourself because we don't want to send traffic there. Okay, so... It started with the sentence, one of the most beautiful aspects of femininity is pregnancy.
Blah.
Mm-hmm. There are only two kinds of human beings in this world. A man without a womb, the male. And a man with a womb, the woman.
What now? What? Wait, hold on.
Well, a
hold
man...
on.
They're very trans-inclusive, apparently.
Sure. All right.
The womb is distinctive of God's female creation. To embrace our womb is to embrace who we are. To reject the function of the womb is to not only reject the true essence of femaleness. So now we're talking about femaleness, not femininity.
Yeah, sure.
But to reject our creator who designed us.
Oh, there's so much. There's so much here.
So much. It's a treasure.
Oh, wow. Okay. But aside from the like weird man with the, like, I mean, not, that's not weird. Man with the womb, totally fine. You know, if you're trans and you, you don't have to be female bodied. That's totally fine. But, the language there is really odd, but it's not surprising. When I did my pre-marriage classes, I got married in the Catholic Church. When we did our pre-marriage classes, it was very clear that the purpose of man and woman coming together, the purpose of marriage is to support, you know, a family. I mean, from a religious perspective, it makes perfect sense. But I think that we can also choose not to have children. And maybe not everybody has this like biological imperative to have children.
The reason why I'm reading this is that I think it kind of, in a very condensed and extreme way, kind of sums up a lot of things that people actually think about like femininity. I think many people think that it's kind of that motherhood is a part of femininity.
Yes.
And it actually goes on like with to reject motherhood is to reject the transcendence of our femaleness. So motherhood is also part of our innate femininity. Motherhood is primal, powerful, protecting, and permeating, not only in our children's lives, but also in society. Motherhood is not something we perform at a certain time of our life. Motherhood is who we are as a female.
Hello, performative gender roles.
Yeah. And then also the desire to nurture is divinely inherent in every woman, even those who seemingly reject motherhood. Those who refuse to wait for it. Now that's your part and my part. Those who refuse to embrace children into their arms will usually have a cat or a dog, which they nurture like a human baby. Well, that's true.
That's true. But you know what? There's also like a whole strain of complaints online about people who are mothers who or parents generally who complain about those of us who have pets who call them our fur babies and say, they're not real babies. You don't understand.
Yes, I read about that this week. Oh, God. You know what? I think that just maybe nurturing and caring for someone is just a human trait, maybe not just a female trait. And maybe we all want to do that sometimes.
You mean men and women can both have empathy and nurture people?
I mean men with wombs and men without wombs.
Oh, shit. Fuck. Yeah. No. I mean, this is the thing. Like, that whole thing from this website is all about how we as a society have become trained, this like performative aspect of gender, of, you know, what is woman, what is female, what is male, that we have bought into as a society that, yes, you know, women have to wear dresses and earrings and makeup. You know, when the last time I freaking wore makeup was, I can't even tell you because I don't wear makeup because it's too much of a pain in the ass. And it's not because for me, it's not because I'm rejecting like myself as a woman. It's because
I have other
things to do in the morning, like sleep in.
Yes. Yes.
And it doesn't make me any less of a woman because I'm not wearing makeup. Just like it doesn't make me any less of a woman because I choose not to have children.
Yeah, of course. Yes, I agree. I absolutely agree, of course. And I think there's this, and I think that, you know, part of the construction of femininity is that we link it so closely with motherhood. And I think that's also one of the reasons why women who choose not to have children sometimes are viewed as not really feminine enough, or that they kind of reject something that is inherently part of their gender.
Sure.
And I also have a quote from a more sensible webpage, which is called The Feminist Wire. I mean, it's not... I just wanted to say it's not difficult to find a more sensible web page than this.
No, it is not.
But on the other hand, there's so much stuff online that I don't even dare to say that, because who knows what else I would find if I would look further than page 3 in Google. So, okay. So the Feminist Wire, in an op-ed about detaching motherhood from femininity, stated, quote, "Women make a multitude of decisions that impact the course of their lives. Some of these decisions are specific to marriage or partnership, career, education, and children. It seems, however, that out of all the decisions that a woman makes in her lifetime, there is no choice that comes to define her as more naturally feminine than her decision to become a mother. The concept of motherhood is so tightly associated with female identity that we are unable to conceive of a woman who has children and regrets doing so, or who chooses not to have children at all. There is something about choosing not to become a mother that is tied to this ideology of motherhood as a feminine imperative. It's as if choosing not to have children is choosing not to be feminine, and a woman choosing not to be feminine is a tough pill for people to swallow."
I'm kind of reminded of, well, there's a lot of things that this reminds me of. When it talked about the naturally feminine and I immediately had that picture of Beyonce, pregnant Beyonce, as like the Virgin Mary. I mean, we have this real glorification of motherhood in the United States, and that image really plays into that, but also in a really kind of subversive way as well. But the other thing I'm reminded of is butch lesbians. Butch lesbians are some of the most transgressive people in society, because they claim their femininity. They refuse to let you like misgender them. You know, they say that, like, they say if they're misgendered and call, they called sir. I have a number of butch lesbian friends from college who, you know, they have been misgendered over and over again, and they refuse to be misgendered, and they continually reinstantiate their genders. Like, no, it's she, it's her. But they also choose not to like have this ultimate feminine presentation of their gender. And I think that that's really, I think it's very transgressive in society today, particularly when with issues of like femininity.
And I think it's also, there's so much power in, instead of just refusing to use a label, reclaiming that label and using it as you want to use it and making it mean what you want it to mean.
Yes. And forcing people to identify you as what you want to be identified as, and like totally subverting social expectations of what that is.
Yeah. So one thing I also thought about, because we also talked about our reasons for not having children earlier in the episode, I thought about our episode on tocophobia that we did a while ago.
Absolutely.
So you should also go back and listen to that, because we also talk about how freaky being pregnant is, how terrifying it is, actually.
Think Alien, like the thing, like bursting out of your body.
Yeah. So I, like, one of the reasons why I don't want to have children is that it's completely inconceivable, for me, to think of, like, my body being invaded in that way. And I use such negative language because that's what it feels like to me. You know, I don't want to be a host to a child. No, really.
Yeah, no.
I'm saying it the way that I'm saying it because this is how I feel about it. It's not, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful to people to women who are pregnant or want to be pregnant or have children.
Yeah.
But this is what it feels like to me. And one thing that's also, that also kind of ties in with what I said about femininity and motherhood, or motherhood being kind of the epitome of femininity, is that it's not just motherhood that is romanticized and glorified, it's also pregnancy itself. And the pregnant body as kind of the highest the highest form of female embodiment or something like that, you know?
You know, what's so weird about that is that it's like the one time in your life that you're allowed to eat whatever the heck you want and get fat, but then you're immediately expected to get back to like being thin and whatever.
Yes.
Gross.
And actually, Narcisse, we did a whole bunch of episodes about pregnancy and childbirth and tocophobia and also postnatal depression and all of that. So if you're interested, really go back to that. It was really an interesting series. But yeah, being pregnant is usually in pop culture and mainstream media constructed as something beautiful and romantic, but it rarely is. For women who've gone through pregnancy, they usually say that it's a painful process, especially childbirth at the end of it is horrifyingly painful. And there's so many things that happen to your body that are unpleasant at the very least, that it's something that we probably shouldn't romanticize in the way that we do.
Not only that, but, you know, there are a lot of people that once they have kids, I mean, not just postpartum depression, but they just like, their kids can be kind of assholes and they don't really like their kids. And, you know, as a teenager, like I was an asshole as a teenager. I'll give you that. I was a great little kid, asshole teenager. But you're stuck. Like, it's not a decision to be taken lightly to have kids. You know, this is something that you are going to have and have to take care of for 18 plus years. So, you know, and if you end up not actually liking your kid and your kid doesn't like you, like, good luck.
Yeah. I mean, you can divorce your husband. You can't divorce your child, you know.
Your children can divorce you, though.
Yeah. Which is also rough. not just that you don't like your child as a person, but what also can happen is that you have a child and then you realize maybe that's just not as fulfilling as you thought it would be.
Sure.
And that's something that a lot of friends tell me, particularly because they expected it to be this extremely romantic thing, you know. And then they were basically stuck with a child, had to do most of the housework and the child caring work because usually, you know, in those cases, it was the women who stayed at home and the guys had to work even more to kind of earn enough money for the now three people family.
Sure. Babies are expensive.
Expensive. And then, you know, those women, my friends, they are like all intelligent, cool, usually very, you know, active women. And then they were like in the house with a child and had to change diapers and, you know, clean up baby vomit all day. And it's just, I'm sure there are nice things about being a mother, but I think a lot of young mothers struggle with the fact that it's something that is so romanticized that they are so disappointed when it actually happens. And then the disappointment is also something that you can't really talk about.
Oh, and there's so much guilt associated with it too. I mean, you know, if you don't talk about how what a beautiful miracle the whole thing was, then you're a bad
bundle
person,
of joy.
Right? Yeah. Through that. Yeah, no. I mean, and all of these things are why are part of why a lot of women choose not to have children because they have seen this happen with their friends. They have experienced this through vicariously through friends who have had children in the media. And I think we're being able to talk about this more. You know, people are admitting that this is a problem, that not everybody, you know, is maybe cut out to have kids, and that it's not actually this super easy thing where you can just, you know, let the kids run around and
let your hair flow in the wind and be happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, that's again, not being perfectly happy with a child is something that's, again, much more acceptable for men than it is for women. As a man, I can bitch about how annoyed I am that I now have to care for a child every now and then. If you do that as a woman, that's considered much worse.
Yeah.
Because again, you kind of goes to show that it is perceived as kind of rejecting something innately feminine.
Yes.
Or something that is a character imminent thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which it isn't for men. Yeah. And then I also found a BBC article that stated that a study in Canada actually found that roughly half of all women who were childless in their 40s actually chose to be that from a very early age. Hmm. And then also many of them didn't say so because of the social pressure they would get if they mentioned a preference for staying childless.
Yes.
And that also reminded me of the sentence that people throw at me all the time, which is, you want children, you'll see.
Ugh, gross.
One day we want children. And people said that to me when I was 12. And people said that to me when I was 20, and people say that to me now that I'm 30. Although now that I'm 30, it's usually, well, it's more like, are you sure that one day there won't be a point in your life where you regret not having children, you know, because they realize that I'm kind of getting too old.
Yeah, I mean, that biological clock is ticking.
Oh God, can you hear it?
I mean, it's so loud. It's a couple years ago, I started having perimenopausal symptoms. And perimenopause is like, okay, so here's the thing they don't tell you about menopause.
Okay.
You can have perimenopause for years before actual menopause happens. And it's basically all the symptoms. Oh my gosh. It's like all the symptoms of menopause, but you still have your period.
No.
Yeah. So you have hot flashes, you have weight gain, you have like the hot flashes are probably the worst part. My period was coming every 2 weeks, and it was a disaster. So I started having these symptoms, and so they put me on the pill to help like at least regulate my periods. And then I went off the pill a year later and it had like magically resolved itself. There was like some sort of hormone thing going on with my body. But at the time I thought to myself, I was like, well, if this is the beginning of the end, like I need to figure out if I want to have kids or not. Like I need to, the decision has to be made. So like I talked to my husband about it and I was like, so if this is perimenopause, like, we need to make a decision now. And if we're going to have like kids, we need to like, if this is something we want to do, like TikTok, like my like ovaries are shriveling up. And, and we made a decision. We were like, actually, no, like we don't want to have kids. Like this is like, if my uterus like falls out of my body, like totally fine.
Well, I mean, it's probably not totally fine if he uterus falls out of your body. It doesn't sound very pleasant. No.
But at the same time, you know, we had to have that conversation because, you know, it's it's all a theoretical conversation until you hit menopause. And then it's like, well, okay, this isn't ever going to happen. So
it's either now or never.
Yeah. But yes, we still chose not to. We're good.
Well, yeah, as I said, I can't imagine having a child now any more than I could when I was 15.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, sure.
And also there's this aspect of, I feel like I'm still a child. You know, how could I?
You're 30, Beatrice.
But I don't know if there's ever a point in anyone's life where they feel grown up. Do you feel like an adult?
I mean, I'm 41. I kind of felt more like an adult when I had a regular 9-to-5 job than I do now.
Yeah.
As a professor. But I, you know, I'm also around 18-year-olds on a day-to-day basis. So I think that keeps me feeling young, although I feel really old some days. So
yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel as old as I felt my parents were when they were in their 40s.
Yes, exactly.
But I also think, having seen friends of mine, so I, of my high school friends, I was just thinking about this. I have seven really close friends from high school. Of the seven of us, only two have kids. And I feel like it ages people, like the sleeplessness, the worrying about, you know, constantly being worried about the kids. I feel like it forces you to age more than someone who doesn't have to have kids. I mean, I have worries too, but they're not about, you know, whether someone's going to kidnap and murder my child. So.
Well, I don't worry about someone kidnapping and murdering my cat.
No, exactly. I mean, my dog was pretty cute when he was still alive, so someone might have kidnapped him, but not killed him because he was freaking adorable.
I mean, Moni's quite a bitch and she would probably scratch and bite a lot, so that's very unlikely. It's very unlikely, although she's pretty sweet also. So maybe I should worry. I don't know. So a study by Julia McQuillan also tried to find out what the reasons were for women not to talk about their decisions not to have children. And she said that highly religious women, they did not perceive as many social messages stressing the importance of having children compared with less religious women, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, of course they don't perceive it because it's a part of who they are already.
I mean, that could be an explanation. One thing that I thought about, but maybe that's the wrong explanation, is that having children is considered a part of their, like a natural part of everyone's life. So because of that, if you don't have a child, people just think that you will have a child.
Yeah,
anyways.
I mean,
you
know the expectation is that you're going to have a child anyway because you're part of this community of believers who think that, that having a child is normal and have normalized that.
Yeah, so people maybe don't question it because they think that that you will have a child in the end anyway. Sure. So it's just maybe later or something. Yeah, that's what I thought, but it might be wrong. And your explanation sounds much more logical than mine. Yeah, and Hispanic and African-American women were least likely to be voluntarily child-free, but were most likely to have biomedical fertility barriers, i.e. infertility. Also, by the way, this is a study that was conducted in America, so this is why I'm talking about African-American women. And then the average age of women who were child-free by choice was about 4 years older than the average age of those with biomedical barriers and about 6 years older than childless women with situational barriers such as financial concerns, education, or job demands, or lack of a partner.
So here's the deal, though. I mean, my sister has a friend, actually, I know several women who chose to have a child as a single person. You know, they had relatively fulfilling careers. They were in their maybe 30s and they chose to do in vitro with a sperm donor and were raising a child by themselves. I mean, don't let the lack of a partner keep you from having a child if that's what you want.
I'm not sure how the situation is in Austria, but I think there is something about, I don't know if it's adoption or in vitro fertilization. I think it's adoption, where single women are not allowed to do it. But I'm not sure about
that.
I think there was.
Sense.
I think I think it's different now, but just something in the back of my mind. I'm not sure about it now. Mm-hmm. We cut that out. Okay. So family income was highest among voluntarily child-free women and lowest among women with fertility issues.
Okay. That's interesting.
Which is also interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, the highest income for voluntarily child-free women makes sense because very often, as we will see later on, women who choose not to have children, like, I think they tend to have higher education. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's actually something that when we talk about poverty in the developing world, one of the things that they bring up and the reason that the education of women is so important is because the more educated women are in a society, the lower the birth rate is and the more likely they are to be able to have jobs and the economy to grow because they're building something that's not just having children.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's just something that I found hilarious because it's so obvious. But Julia McQuillan also found that distress over not having children is something that women only experience if motherhood is meaningful or important to them. Voluntary child-free women feel little distress over their decision, regardless of what their family or friends think about the choice. Well, of course not.
We don't feel distress over the decision. We feel distress over the constant nagging about having a child.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course I'm distressed about, I mean, women are distressed. Women who want children and can't have children are distressed about it.
But absolutely.
Women who want a certain career and don't get it are also distressed about it. You know what I mean? It's like I'm sure. distressed about not getting what I want in life.
Yes.
No matter what it is. So it's not just, I think we talk about this issue as if it's something so like singular, you know, like something completely different than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Like the distress women experience when they want children and don't have children. It's something that they experience in every other aspect of their lives too, when they don't, like when their lives don't turn out the way they think they
would. Yeah. I mean, it's,
and then also
they're inherently, there's this like innate desire to be a mother. If they want to be a mother, great. Yeah. There's stress about, there is distress about not having kids. If they don't have this biological drive to have children, then there's not going to be any stress about not having kids.
Yeah, I just found it hilarious that you have to explicitly say that women who don't want to have children don't feel distress over the fact that you don't have children.
Yeah.
No shit. Yeah. So, and then one thing. And then there's one quote which is also awesome. It's rather than assume that women without children are missing something, society should benefit from valuing a variety of paths for adult women to have satisfying lives. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just groundbreaking. And it's sad that this is still, that those things still need to be said.
Oh, sure.
That's the sad thing about it.
Sure.
That. Yeah. Yeah, and then one thing that you already, I think, mentioned was the whole selfishness argument.
Yeah.
Which is just so ridiculous. So a lot of people say that not having children is selfish because then you have all your time to do things that you like to do or for your career or to enjoy your life or whatever. And that's apparently selfish. Now, I've never understood it. It's so ridiculous because I think a lot of, you could just turn this around so easily and say, isn't it much more selfish to want to birth children or have children just to have like little teeny tiny versions of yourself that kind of continue your genes because you think it's a gift to the world that there are.
Sure. I mean, both sides can try and claim this selfish argument.
Absolutely.
But all that does, you know what? All that does is it pits women against women.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
And all that does is kind of distract from the issue that like society is telling us that we need to have children. If we choose not to have children, that is a choice. And if you want to say that's selfish, fine, go ahead. I have no problems with my own decisions.
Yeah. I didn't say that because I want
no,
support the argument. I just wanted to show how stupid it is that And you know, it's something that comes up a lot when conversations with people, is that they say that I'm selfish because I don't want to have children. And I just wanted to kind of show that you could just turn this around and say, no, you're selfish. And then you have two people screaming at each other that they're selfish, which doesn't make, you know, which doesn't help anyone.
Yeah. I mean, the name calling is totally pointless. And all it does is it's like an ad hominem attack that doesn't address the real issues of why you're choosing not to have children, which is a totally personal choice. And why are you questioning my personal choice?
Yeah. And I think even if you don't follow celebrity news or anything, but I think the way we treat celebrity women is very often a good indicator of how we think about certain topics in society.
Fucking Jennifer Aniston. Leave that fucking woman alone.
Leave that fucking woman alone. Yeah. I don't know if you've, I mean, you've probably noticed that she is, Jennifer Aniston is child-free.
Good for her.
I mean, let her do what she wants, right? And she just keeps getting asked by interviewers whether she wants to have children, whether she wants to remain childless or child-free, or, you know, whatever choice of words those people usually didn't have. Usually they say childless and not child-free, you know, and just keep nagging and asking about whether she wants to have children and when she wants to have children. It's horrible.
So if you Google famous women who don't have children, you will find a Huffington Post article. We'll link to it.
I'm going to do that.
Of course, it mentions Jennifer Aniston, but let me mention a couple of others to you. Helen Mirren, also an amazing actress, chose not to have kids.
I didn't know that.
Totally fine. Aisha Tyler.
Just Helen Mirren is already postmenopausal, so she is not annoyed that much.
No, fuck her. I mean, she doesn't care. Fuck it. So Aisha Tyler, she's a comedian. She does not have children. She's okay with that. Portia de Rossi, Ellen DeGeneres's partner.
And then also Portia also Ellen DeGeneres.
Exactly.
Both of them don't have children.
Yes. Ashley Judd, another actress, doesn't have children. Totally fine with it. Rashida Jones.
Okay.
Also Margaret Cho.
Oh, God, I love her.
Betty White.
Okay.
I think Zooey Deschanel has actually in, she was listed here, but I think in the interim, she's actually had kids. I feel like maybe. And lastly, Cameron Diaz.
I didn't know that either. Why is no one bothering her? And everybody
no one bothers
just
her. Nobody bothers Betty White about it. Yeah. Betty White is like 90 something years old, doesn't have kids. And you know what she does have? She does a lot with animal rescue because she loves animals.
See, that proves the stereotype.
I aspire to be like Betty White.
Oh, yes.
Giving zero fucks about what people think about me.
Yeah. And rescuing animals. That's a good thing to do with your life. Such
life
a good
goals.
Thing. Mm. I didn't know that I did know that Cameron Diaz didn't have children. I didn't, but what I find interesting is that she's never asked. Did you ever read an interview with her where she was kind of bothered by an interview about not having children? Because that's something that
possible. Yeah. I don't know.
But somehow Jennifer Aniston is the woman that everybody just keeps harassing about it.
Yes. And now she's married to Cameron Diaz is married to Benji Madden from Good Charlotte, the band Good Charlotte.
God.
Yeah. But like, he's younger than her. He's 39. And yeah, I mean, whatever. You do you.
You do you, Cameron. I'm looking at pictures of them now and I'm like, what? Why? But you know. Whatever.
Yeah, there are a lot of child-free women, and there are a lot of women who probably in the past, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, probably didn't actually want to have children, but they didn't have an option. So they were just terrible mothers. Lucrezia Borgia, I'm looking at you.
Who is that?
The Borgias? You don't know who the Borgias are?
The Borgias?
They're like an Italian family from the early modern medieval period, early modern, which is Renaissance time, who... Like her, I think she had an uncle who was Pope and the Borgias in Italy.
You know, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, there are several TV shows about the Borgias. They were super ruthless and they controlled a lot of Italy.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
you know, I don't know.
And Lucrezia Borgia is often held up as this like super, like both a femme fatale and like a really evil woman because she had, she ruled this family and she got people killed. I mean, she killed people.
Okay. And she was a mother, not a good one.
And she was a mother. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably should not have been one.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And you also, I mean, now stepping away from, I'm trying to find a segue into our next section.
There's no segue into the next section.
Like, now we step away from what happened in the Middle Ages in Italy. Yeah, we'll talk about what happened in 2010 in America.
Yeah, so let's talk about statistics. Mm,
yeah, that's a good segue. So, let's talk about statistics.
Yeah, so we do a census every 10 years in the United States. 2010 was our last census. We do little surveys in between, but like we do one big census every 10 years. Mm-hmm. So according to the Pew Research Center, who kind of went through a lot of the statistical data and did some research on their own, the share of American women in their mid-40s who are without biological children is actually at its lowest point in 40 years. Mm-hmm. So in 2013, we had this like, oh, the scare thing from Time magazine that says, oh, women are choosing not to have children. Oh, no, people are choosing not to have kids. And now in 2014, we have research that says, oh, actually, in 2014, 15% of women age 40 to 44 had not given birth to any children. And that was down from 20% in 2005. Mm-hmm. And it was similar to what the rate of childlessness in 1994.
Mm-hmm. So there are fewer childless women now than
in their 40s. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can talk about a lot of things. It could be that fertility treatments have made it possible for women who wanted to have children to have children. We've made a lot of advances in fertility treatments in the last 10 years. It could be a number of things. But let's talk about how they actually relate to the child-free movement. The data doesn't take into account issues with women's and men's fertility. It also only focuses on folks who have actually given birth, not those who chose to adopt. So not all of these women are actually choosing to be child-free. One footnote in the report suggests that, quote, among childless women ages 40 to 44, about 13% report that they are still planning on having a child, which with advances in fertility treatment, you can do that. Mm-hmm. And again, they're only talking about biological children. They're not talking about adoptions at all.
Okay.
Well, the rest are equally likely to report that they are either childless by choice or involuntarily childless. So that means basically 13% of women 40 to 44 are childless by choice or are involuntarily childless because of fertility mm-hmm. issues. And we don't actually have any statistics that tell us how many of these women are choosing to be child-free. But honestly, 13% is not an epidemic.
No, no.
13% of 40-year-olds is not an epidemic.
I mean, not really. It could be worse.
Yeah. Choosing to be child-free, not wanting to have kids, is something very different than wanting to have those kids and putting it off until one is more advanced in their career, but unable to do so because of fertility issues. According to a 2009 study at Ohio State University, sociologist Sarah Hayford said that about 67% of women decide as teenagers to have two children. And they roughly stick with that plan. Another smaller group starts out wanting three or more kids and ends up having more than the average of two. And another segment starts out wanting two, but they end up with fewer. And those are those who are on the fence and ultimately decide not to have children make up about 4% of the population. Mm-hmm. Four.
Mm-hmm. I find it just fascinating that all of the studies just focus on biological children, opens up a whole nother issue. Because why is it the case that apparently only biological children are kind of regarded as like real children or, you know?
Well, and only biological mothers are quote unquote real mothers. I mean, this like is a total marginalization of people who choose to have children via adoption and their status as mothers and the children's status as the children of those mothers.
Yeah.
So Dr. Hafer said he was specifically looking at the evolution of fertility expectations and how our desires for children change over time. But this 4% number is really significantly different from the 13% when we combine combine the childless by choice and the involuntarily childlessness. I mean, if that 13% is really only 4%.
Okay.
Really, it's 9% that are involuntarily childless of 40-year-olds, mm-hmm. But only 4% are, you know, childless by choice.
So it's not really an epidemic at all.
Maybe not. No, but Time Magazine wants to scare you into thinking that it's an epidemic. So what does that mean? I mean, what is that telling us? Do we have an issue with a declining birth rate? Europe certainly does. The United States does among certain populations. That causes problems for the social welfare system because you need to have younger people paying into that system. Yeah. So yes, there are cascading problems with having a declining birth rate, but 4%, that's not it.
Nope.
So her study draws on other research that also shows that, quote, at the high end of the education scale, women tend to have smaller families. And you mentioned this. The hypothesis is that highly educated women may find their work more personally fulfilling than women with less education.
Do you think so?
I know. They may rely less on children as a way of providing their own identity.
Yeah. Well, actually, Wikipedia says, among women aged 35 to 44, the chance of being childless was far greater for never married women than for ever married. When the same group is analyzed by education level, increasing education correlates with increasing childlessness. Not high school graduate, 13.5%, high school graduate, 14.3%, some college, no degree, 24.7%, associate degree, 11.4%, bachelor's degree, 18.2%, and graduate or professional degree, 27.6%. So,
I mean that makes perfect sense.
No surprises there.
Yeah, no. Finally, so the data that Hayford was looking at was a longitudinal study of women who were between 14 and 22 in 1979. Mm-hmm. So this means that these women were late boomers and early Gen Xers, once again pointing to the fact that this is not a new concern among women, and this is not just an issue of millennials being selfish and disrupting the way that we look at fertility and having children.
And also, if you really think that people are selfish, why? I mean, actually, in theory, adopting a child would be the least selfish thing to do, right?
Yeah, sure.
So why don't you just advertise that instead of advertising having biological children? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the child-free movement is all about no kids, period. So, or people who choose to be child-free are like, I'm child-free because I want freedom. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, given that oral contraceptives were first approved for use in the United States in the 60s, it's really not surprising that women subsequent to this would feel that they were capable of taking control of their fertility. You know, mm-hmm. And we talked about this earlier. If you can choose not to have a child, if you have control over whether or not you have a child, even if you don't believe in abortion, even if you don't want to have an abortion, if you can take the pill and choose not to have children, I mean, that mm-hmm. has a huge impact on your ability to go to college, to get an education, to have a job.
Yeah. Yep.
So in Kazan's Atlantic article that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, she quotes Amy Blackstone, a sociologist at the University of Maine, who states that, quote, there are not many people who early on say, I definitely don't want kids. Kazan states that even the childless are more likely to start out unsure or unassuming that they will have kids. It's only over a time that they decide against it. I would say that this is part of this kind of Judeo-Christian bias that constantly leads us back to the defining norms of society. And the defining norm is that you should want to have children. Mm-hmm. We have statistics that say that the average family has 2.1 kids, and birth rates, as I said, are declining throughout Europe and the United States. And this causes a whole host of problems. But that's the story perhaps for another episode.
Yeah.
For the sake of talking about the choice not to have children, this is a clear sign that many of these women are choosing to reject the dominant narrative that has been placed on them, that they must have children, that this is a biological and moral imperative. Mm-hmm. Moreover, Kazan points out that the main reason that women cite for not having children, according to analysis from studies in the 80s and 90s, is the desire for freedom. And honestly, this isn't just a factor for women. Both men and women are choosing not to have children because they want to focus on their careers, because they want to experience the world, go mm-hmm. on vacations, because they don't want to have to make sacrifices.
Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, for me, it's not just about, because you said freedom, the child-free movement is about freedom. I think it's not just about freedom. For me, it's also a question of what talents do I have? What can I give back, in a sense, you know? And I know that I wouldn't be a good mother, so I think I can serve society in other ways much better than by having children, because I wouldn't be good at that. I would be a horrible mother because I don't like children. I don't want to be around them. I don't want to have anything to do with them, so why should I be a mother? And I can do other things, you know. I can be an activist. I can be a writer. Yeah. I can do other shit that also maybe helps other people, you know.
Sure. I mean, what's your vocation? Like, what are you called to do? What do you think your talents, where are your talents best served? And it may be that they're not, you know, your talents are not best used having children. And that's fine.
Yeah. And it's a problem when we assume that that's what you have to do, because then you, as we said, might just be shitty at it. And we don't need more shitty parents.
No, we don't. One final thing that I thought was interesting about Kazan's article is that she points out the work of Lonnie Arson and Stephanie Altman, two researchers at Queen's University in Ontario, who've come up with an explanation as to why folks who don't want children haven't simply been eliminated by the gene pool, right? I mean, if you don't want kids and it's a genetic thing that is leading you, a biological thing that is leading you not to want to have children, if you don't have children, then theoretically that gene doesn't get passed on.
Well, but you need other people to do other shit too. And you need people to that are able to care for children when the parents die.
Exactly. But basically, these two researchers argue that we had no choice in the past. There may have been women who didn't want to have children, but whose only means of making an impact on the world was through their children. And if you think about the early modern period, the medieval period, again, looking at Lucrezia Borgia, she had to have children in order to maintain her power. If she didn't need to have children to maintain her power, and she could have done it another way, if she had more political capital as a woman in Renaissance Italy, then maybe she would have done it another way. But instead, the best way to exert power was through her family, through her children. So,
yeah.
What Arson and Altman argue is that these women who didn't want kids but eventually had them, quote, might have passed down a weak parenting drive that essentially lay dormant until the modern age, and that now women have more rights and opportunities. The descendants of these reluctant mothers are foregoing making babies in order to make art, write books, start nonprofits and businesses, and pursue other non-kid accomplishments. Hmm. So biology and feminism may intersect here in an interesting way. And this is exactly the point you were making. Like, you have other things that you want to do besides have children that are making more of an impact than having a child would.
In my case, yes, because I mean, I would make an impact as a mother, I'm sure of it, but it wouldn't be a good impact. My children would hate me. And I would hate them, so maybe not. Yeah. We also already talked, like, in the very beginning, we already talked about, like, child freedom and feminism and what they have to do with each other. And yeah, we don't think that being child free is the best way to be a feminist at all. So that's not our point here.
No, it's a way to express your feminism, but it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. The point of feminism is for women to make their own choices, and child freedom is one of those choices. And yeah. So, Liz, you already, in the beginning, you already talked about the child-free movement as a movement, or whether it is a movement. And actually, as I said, I think there have always been women who didn't have children and always been people who didn't have children, who chose not to have children, or who couldn't have children, or for whatever reasons didn't have children. So it's probably wrong to say that the child-free movement started in the 1970s. But in the 1970s, we saw that this kind of grassroots movement, that, you know, the people started organizing and their, like, organizations came into being. And actually in America, there are two very notable child-free organizations that were established during the 1970s. And there's one that's called No Kidding, which calls itself an international social club for adult couples and singles who have never had children. And then there's the National Organization for Non-Parents, which then was renamed as National Alliance for Optional Parenthood. So the National Organization for Non-Parents was founded in California by Ellen Peck and Shirley Radall in 1972. And it was formed to advance the notion that people could choose not to have children to be child-free. And then it changed its name into the National Alliance for Optional Parenthood. It continued into the early 1980s, both as a support group for those making the decision to be child-free and as an advocacy group fighting pronatalism, so attitudes and advertising, etc., promoting or glorifying parenthood. And according to its bylaws, the purpose of the National Alliance for Optional Parenthood was to educate the public on non-parenthood as a valid lifestyle option, supporting those who choose not to have children, promote awareness of the overpopulation problem, and assist other groups that advance the goals of the organization. And yeah, there are, you know, in the 70s, groups started organizing that were campaigning against pronatalist policies, such as the banning of abortions, for example. So Ireland, for example, and I could name many, many more countries. And actually, I think most countries have very pronatalist policies.
Oh, definitely.
Which doesn't mean that they are very friendly to women who have children, but to having children itself. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and a good example for that is Ireland, because their anti-abortion stance comes mainly from, well, mainly from immense pressure emanating from the Roman Catholic Church. And they, of course, still exercise a very strong influence on the government. And as such, the government maintains very strict abortion laws, with anyone caught getting an abortion being heavily penalized unless it's absolutely required to save women's lives. And we talked about abortion in the episode about women's rights in America and in the episode about women's rights in Austria. Mm-hmm. And in Austria, abortion is still not technically legal, and it's still very difficult to get one, and it's still very expensive. So that's also a very pronatalist stance, of course, and also a misogynistic one, both of those things at the same time.
You know, it's interesting, because I don't have kids, I am somewhat resentful of policies that only benefit people who do have children. I'm all for paying taxes for public education, because I think public education is a communal good.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, yeah, it benefits everybody. Where I live right now, the public education system is in shambles. Mm-hmm. And the state has had to take it over because they mismanaged their money. So mm-hmm. nobody wants to move here because our schools are terrible, which also means that our housing prices decrease. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, it's terrible. But there are other things like giving people a tax break because they have children. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, things like that. When I hear about a restaurant who is a child-free restaurant, I am super excited to go there.
Yes.
I am super excited to visit that place, to not have to hear screaming children.
Yes.
I'm totally freaking for it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not immune to the screams of children.
Mm-hmm.
They bother me. I know that a lot of parents, once they hear the screams of children, they can totally tune it out. I can't do that. It's really like upsetting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to be a part of my day to day, or having children running around. My mother, if I had done that in a restaurant, my mother would have forced the entire family to leave and made me feel bad for it, because I was the one who made everybody leave. So I sat quietly at the table and did my thing. I don't, you know, that's just my thing. So I want to go to a restaurant.
I'm not sure whether that was a criticism of your mom, though.
It's a little of both, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Let's not talk
a little
about
guilt goes a long way. I'm fine with it. It's good. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't have kids. I don't want kids. I don't want to be surrounded by kids. If I choose to hang out with friends who have children, at like children's birthday parties or whatever, I'm there because I'm in support of the parent, not because I want to spend time with the children.
Mm-hmm.
So those type, you know, policies that are, I don't want to say anti-natalist, but like pro non-parent,
yeah,
are few and far between. And I know that there are a lot of places like Germany and Austria and other places in the EU that have declining birth rates that have really gone the way of pronatalist policies of giving like mm-hmm. extra time off for childcare, being much more flexible. I think those are great because women deserve to have to be able to recover from the trauma of having a child.
Yes.
But as a person who doesn't have children, you know, that's not something that I'll ever take advantage of.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Also, what I'm thinking about is planes.
Screaming
children on planes.
If someone advertised a child-free transatlantic flight,
I'd pay more money for that just to know people that were children.
Oh my gosh, I would pay so much money for
money.
That. I would pay so much money for that. Mm. So much.
You know, the thing is, at least in Austria, it is, I feel like people consider it a character flaw if you're not child-friendly, you know? When there are people who's running around screaming in a restaurant and I'm annoyed by it, I'm the bad person, you know?
Oh, my husband. We were in a restaurant that was kind of open and very echoey.
Mm-hmm.
And the people at the table next to us had this child that was screaming, and the parents and the grandparent were encouraging the child to scream. They were playing this screaming game.
Right.
And so it was just this child screaming, echoing in this restaurant. And so my husband said something. Mm. He was like, you know, there's a table outside. Why don't you sit outside if your child's going to scream? Mm-hmm. He got the dirtiest looks. And I was like, this is bullshit. Like, don't encourage your children to act badly in public and then expect everybody else to just fawn over your child.
Yeah, because they're children and they,
Yeah. There is a documentary coming out about being child free. So the documentary itself is called My So-Called Selfish Life. And it's a film by Teresa Schechter about not having children in a culture where motherhood feels mandatory. She kickstarted the initial funding for the film, and the film chronicles the rise of a growing community of women who don't want children and who reject the message that a woman's most important and most natural role is to be a mother.
Oh my God, we need to do an interview with her.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Therese, if you hear this, give us a call. She who persisted podcast at gmail.com, write us. Also, Cameron Diaz.
Yes. So on her website about the film, she explains that, quote, almost half of American women between 15 and 44 have never had children, according to 2014 statistics, an all-time high. Yet choosing not to have children is still seen by many as a deviant decision made by the immoral, the unfeminine, and the selfish. Mm. So her film exposes the powerful cultural, economic, and historical forces behind the message that a woman's only true identity and value is as a mother. And some of the folks that she interviews for the film include a 19-year-old student determined to get her tubes tied, so having a hysterectomy. Well, not a hysterectomy, but yeah. The founder of a child-free LGBT seniors community, a 75-year-old child-free activist who was denounced after appearing on 60 Minutes, which is like a news program in the United States. And a rapper searching for a, quote, golden girl style family, and a woman whose unsuccessful fertility treatments led to life transformation of not having children.
When is it coming out?
She's still filming it right now. She's working on the film right now, and she's doing interviews for it. I mean, we could reach out to her.
We should reach out to her, and we should do an episode about it, because this sounds amazing, and it sounds like a lot of things that we talked about today.
So if you want to find out more about the film or supporting her, you can check out her website, which is myselfishlife.com. But I want to focus on a specific woman she chooses to look at in her film, which is the 19-year-old woman who is determined to surgically get her tubes tied. Because it's crazy how many people treat you when you choose to do something with your uterus other than having a baby. So, for example, I know.
Well,
I have a friend who had cysts that were causing her significant pain, terrible periods, but she thought it was just normal. For entire life, she thought that this was just how periods were. This was totally normal, whatever. It's not. She ended up having, if I remember correctly, a melon-sized cluster of cysts, and her options were limited. She ended up at the age of 39 having a hysterectomy. And at every step in the process, people kept asking her if she was sure this is what she wanted to do and that she would regret it because she wouldn't be able to have kids. So here's the thing. My friend's a biologist. She has a PhD in biology.
Yeah.
She had done so much research on her options and even the best methods for having her hysterectomy. She didn't make this decision lightly, but she knew that she was doing the best thing for her body, for her health. And yet the only thing people could focus on was the fact that she was going to lose her ability to have children, as though she would lose her identity as a woman as soon as she removed her uterus.
Mm-hmm.
She just wanted to be healthy. She just wanted to not be in pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everybody kept asking her, oh, you're so young. Are you sure you want to do this? Don't you want to, you could freeze your eggs and maybe have children by surrogate later.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it. That's all they focused on. Not the fact that she was in excruciating pain, not the fact that she needed the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, women are making the choice not to pass on genetic problems to their children. They've decided they wouldn't be good parents. They think it would be selfish for them to bring children into the world.
Yeah.
They aren't judging other women, but they're making a choice about their own lives and their own futures and the futures of these potential children who they're concerned might have physical or mental issues that they might pass on to them.
Yeah.
So stop judging people. You don't know their story.
Yeah, absolutely not. And also go back to the episodes we did about childbirth and pregnancy and all of that when we still had Heather on board, because she is the mother of the group. She is a mother, and she had so many valuable things to say about this, and also so many things that I didn't know about because I never had a child. So I think to kind of round up what we talked about today, you should also listen to that if you haven't yet.
Yeah. And one last thing. We've been talking mostly about women with uteruses. There are plenty of women who don't have uteruses. There are women who can't actually have biological children of their own. Yeah. And the only way that they can have children is through surrogacy, through adoption. And that's totally fine. And if they also choose not to have kids, that's fine too.
That's fine too. Yay. I mean, we're so accepting. I mean, we're such good people. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I'm that great of a person, but, you know, we try.
It was a joke. It was a joke. Yeah. Do whatever you want with your body. Seriously. Don't let the muggles get you down. Also, do you want to add anything about child freedom?
Do you want to add anything more about child freedom?
I think one thing that I want to add is that I think we should start trusting women with their decisions. Not just accepting people's choices, but also trusting women to make choices about their own bodies and their lives.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it isn't just about accepting that people are making choices, but a lot of it is this misogyny that says that women can't be trusted to make decisions about their bodies. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think we need to get away from that. And a lot of men don't want to have children either. And if they find a woman who also doesn't want to have children, they're probably perfectly matched. And just let them be, people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Now, that's just one thing I'd like to add, which doesn't have anything to do with having children or not having children. If you've listened to our episode about Austria, you've also heard that we have a new government that is not particularly friendly to feminist or queer organizations or feminist or queer media. And there are a lot of feminist and queer media and organizations that run the risk of being defunded at the moment in Austria. And this is one thing that also will happen to the most important feminist magazine in Austria, which is called Anschläger. So for all of the listeners now, for all of you who speak German, there is a crowdfunding campaign right now going on for Anschläger, and also they are actively looking for people who get subscriptions to the magazines, because this is the only way that the magazine will be able to continue and will be able to keep up their amazing work. And it's really, really an amazing magazine. I've also written for it in the past. They've given a shout out for us in the magazine, which also was very, very nice. And they do a lot of important feminist journalistic work in Austria, I think. And it would be such a shame if, especially in times like these, we lose that important voice or that selection of voices. So if you like feminist journalism, which I suppose you do because you listen to this podcast, and if you speak German, then go to anschläger.at, so www.anschläger, anschläge.at, and get a subscription. They need 600 something subscriptions in order to be able to continue their work. So if you are in Austria, or if you speak German, please do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of feminist media in the United States. Most of the media in the United States is privately run or by nonprofits as well. So this is the case with Anschläger as well. So if you can support them, if you're interested in supporting them, I would definitely encourage it.
Yeah. Go to their webpage. I'm also going to post it in the show notes and on our Facebook, I think. Go to the webpage, make a subscription. Also give a subscription as a birthday present to your mom and your sister and your grandmom, so that we can make sure that Austria will also have feminist media in the future, because we really need that. Yeah. All right.
Great. Well, what's our lesson?
Don't tell people what to do with the genitals. Just never do that. Or with the reproductive organs, or with any part of the body. It's not your fucking business.
Thank you.
Also, if you are a child, don't get in contact with us. We're not interested in talking to you.
Well, I mean,
okay?
Stop calling.
If you're a child who does, who if you're a kid who knows that you don't want to have kids in the future, there's nothing wrong with you.
There's no, there is. If you're a child who wants to have children in the future, there's also nothing wrong
with
you. Sure,
society is going to accept that. But if people keep telling you, you're always going to want to have children, move on.
Yeah. Do what you want with your body. Let others do what they want with their bodies. You know, live and let live. And stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Bye.